listening to the See the Upside podcast, where we talk about overcoming obstacles, choosing positivity, and doing life a little better every day. I'm your podcast host, Nina Bleicher. On the show, we share real stories and speak with industry experts about how to expand and grow through difficult change. We don't always get to choose the challenges that show up in our life, but we do get to decide how we view them. In those hard moments, there are always beautiful invitations. That's what See the Upside podcast is all about. Navigating the hard moments, but then finding the opportunity to heal, grow, and connect. I'm so grateful you're here and can't wait to share these conversations with you. I hope you enjoy the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the See the Upside podcast. Our guest today is Anne Swanson. She is not only a certified yoga therapist, but she's also an author and a speaker, and really gets into a bunch of different things within yoga and meditation that I'm so excited to deep dive into today, which is that combination of kind of the heart and soul side of yoga and meditation, along with the science that backs it. And some other really great areas too, such as yoga and meditation for stress relief, for our health and relieving illness. She's got a great story too. So excited to talk to her today. Nice to see you, Anne. Thanks for being on the show.
I'm so glad to be here, Nina.
Yes. And Anne is actually in Hawaii. I'm super jealous. Never been to Hawaii and it's on my bucket list. So I love it.
Oh my gosh, I just saw a bunch of sea turtles this morning feeding from right in the backyard. It was amazing.
Oh my gosh, so magical. I'm sure like every day it's dolphins and sea turtles and
rainbows. There's a lot of rainbows.
There are. Oh, I love rainbows.
I mean, in Hawaii, there's rainbows every day if you look. It does rain a decent amount certain seasons, but the thing is, it rains really quickly, and then there's a rainbow. And I think in society, we're so used to looking at like, what stresses me out? What triggers me? What is challenging for me? That we need to look for what those sparks, those glimmers, as some psychologists call it, that moment that's just like reminds you like, oh, there's good things in life. So seeing rainbows and sea turtles definitely helps. Finding glimmers in your life is a way to seek out that positive feeling and reinforce it.
Oh, definitely. So magical. I love it. So tell us a little bit, let's start with how you got into meditation and yoga. Like what was a little bit of your journey and how you got here?
Well, like many people, I came to the practices because of my own struggles. I dealt with chronic joint pain since I was a teenager, and it could be quite debilitating. I would be bedridden sometimes, not able to do my work. And as a recovering perfectionist myself, that was very challenging as a type A sort of person. And then I had the anxiety that comes along with that. I mean, my anxiety was so crippling, I would pass out at the most inopportune times. So I came to it out of a necessity for my own mental health, physical health, and well-being. And I started with yoga. I wasn't into meditation. I started with yoga, and I didn't really even like the meditation part of the yoga class. I'd have my eyes wide open, looking at my watch, like, when is it time to go? I have stuff to do. But in time, I started to experience the benefits of the meditation. And now I know that's where the magic is at, is integrating meditation into your life.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So why did you go to yoga? Was it really for working out, like for the exercise element of it initially?
Yeah, I think the physical poses is what brought me to it, but it was also still for my anxiety, you know, and mental health, for finding that balance. But when you do the physical poses with a sense of presence, it's like a meditation and movement. And that was an easier, more accessible way for me to get started, because stillness was just impossible to think about being still with myself. And then in time, as the practice does, it developed my capacity to be still. So I think a lot of people need some sort of movement practice in general for our health and well-being, but also to get into meditation, to be able to settle their nervous system.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and it's so interesting because what I notice in yoga is the people who get up and leave early, which I do sometimes, I have to admit, because I sometimes have to drive my daughter to school, which I hate leaving early. But the people who leave early and are so rushed tend to be the people that you kind of know probably need the meditation and the stillness more than anyone else. Like if you feel like you can't do it, you probably really, really need it, you know?
And the ironic thing is meditation expands your sense of time because you're able to focus in on your priorities and things move at you at a slower rate when your mind is not moving so fast, as meditation helps train us to kind of move things slower. So we become more efficient with our time. We feel like we have more time when we have a meditation practice. So it's kind of this like ironic thing.
So let's talk about that, because I think, you know, many people come to yoga kind of like you did, and I did for the same reason. I actually came really as a workout shift. I had been running a lot and it was hard on my joints, so I switched to yoga, and it was really more, you know, for the exercise element of it. And then it really became so much more, and that meditation piece came in. And I know we'll get into this a little bit later in the interview, but you have two books. One is about yoga, one is about meditation. And the yoga one actually goes beyond kind of the spiritual side of yoga, but goes into the science of yoga. And I love that blend too. But looking at that meditation piece coming into yoga and how we can utilize that beyond just the physical. Can you explain that a little bit more? Like, how does someone new coming to yoga, what should they expect to experience? And how can they open up to that a little bit more?
Yeah, I wrote the book Science of Yoga, my first book, because I really wanted to help people like me that are skeptical and don't know what they're going to experience when they walk in the door to understand that we do have science-backed reasons to practice. We have these benefits that are enormous for our cardiovascular system, for your mental health, for your immune system, for the whole body. At a cellular level, there are changes from practicing yoga. And when I say yoga, I don't only mean the physical asanas or poses. I also mean the meditation is that integral part of yoga. So when I put out Science of Yoga, everybody focused on the beautiful images that were CGI of the poses. And I was like, that's great. People are buying the book. I love that. That's the gateway, right? That got us into it also. But where the magic really happens is what it does to our nervous system, what it can shift in our mindset and how we feel, how we act, how we have our priorities in the world, how the lifestyle choices we make. And a lot of that comes from the more, you know, in a way, they're more advanced practices of meditation. We do the poses and the breathing practices to prepare our body and mind for meditation. So my second book, Meditation for the Real World, dives into how you can practically use meditation in your everyday life, not only at the end of yoga class, but integrating it. So I think it's important that we come to the practice thinking like, how can this help me and how can I integrate it into my life? How am I going to actually practice it? Because it's not going to help you if you don't do it.
Do you feel like it's a little different for everybody, how they integrate it and fit it in to work for them?
Yes, definitely. I'm a yoga therapist, which means not just teaching yoga to everyone. I am looking at what health conditions they have, what priorities they have, what goals they have, and I'm adapting it for individuals or for small groups with health conditions. That's what I do. And so the same happens for meditation, is that you may have tried a type of meditation and you're like, you know what, that didn't work for me. It made me more anxious. That didn't work for me. That doesn't mean meditation doesn't work for you. That means that that meditation, probably even at that time, wasn't the right meditation for you. So that's why I made it so that there's meditations for when you're commuting, meditations when you're angry, when you're grieving the loss of a loved one, when you are about to go and do a presentation and you're feeling nervous. There's meditations that could be adapted for each situation, for the real world.
So cool. I love that idea of having, you know, a toolbox of meditations that you can draw off of for almost any emotional state or, you know, material world situation, so that you can try to come in as your grounded, calmest, best version of yourself that you want to be.
Yeah. And even 1 minute meditations count. And they may count even more if you put them in the right moment. When you are about to give a presentation, doing a 1 minute meditation or a one breath meditation, closing your eyes, settling in, that could change the way you perform. So if you can integrate it into your life when you're feeling frustrated with your kids, when you're waiting for them to arrive for picking them up for school and you're really frustrated, there's traffic and you feel like you might blow, like that's the moment to do a 1 minute meditation in the car before they come into the car. So integrating them into your life in little mini meditations is really what meditation for the real world is all about.
So let's go a little deeper. What is happening in a meditation that creates the shift? How are we calming our nervous system? Like, what are the physical elements that we're recalibrating in our bodies? And what are potentially maybe some of the mind spirit things that could shift as a result of that?
Yeah, I teamed with Harvard neuroscientist Dr. Sarah Lazar to integrate the cutting edge research that you're alluding to right now on meditation. So we have, first off, the immediate effects that you have right when you meditate. While you're meditating, your brain waves are changing. The brain state changes. So the activity, the neural activity, the networks that are active, the communication between different areas of your brain shifts. And also, we have releases of neurochemicals, hormones, immediately when we start meditating. And those can last for hours or even days afterwards. We have serotonin release, that happy chemical. We have other endorphins, oxytocin, that connection hormone. We have our dopamine regulated, which has to do with our reward system and feeling motivated. So there's these immediate effects that lead to long-term changes. So long-term, we start to see changes in the brain tissue. And the gray matter in particular, those are the areas like in our prefrontal cortex, right in the front of your brain, where is responsible for you focusing and planning the future and making good decisions and lifestyle decisions. That area of the brain begins to get more connectivity, more activity, and it works better. And we can see in MRI scans that it's bigger. And that's important because as we age, certain areas, including the prefrontal cortex, degrade. And then as we have chronic pain, like I've experienced, or anxiety or depression, those conditions will degrade critical areas of the brain also. But meditation rebuilds those areas, helps us to be more resilient. And then it goes on and on. It also is affecting you at a cellular level, helping your cells to essentially act younger. So your biological age is going down. So the effects are numerous. The immune system is boosted. You are going to have less sick days from a regular meditation practice. The evidence is there and it's very strong. And if we all knew it, which is why I wanted to communicate it, then we would all practice meditation, whoever we are. It's just a matter of how do we practically do it? You know, how is it going to actually stick in our lives?
Yeah. And I think, you know, those are all wonderful long-term benefits, but it's kind of like, we all know that we need to eat healthy to get a lot of those benefits too, but a lot of people don't do it.
Yes.
So how do we, I do think there are some immediate rewards or incentives mm-hmm. that come from meditating, like in the moment, to ground our emotions and ensure, you know, that we're dealing with the situation at hand in the best way we can. So
yes.
Can we talk a little bit about that? Like taking the example of, you know, let's say we're coming from a stressful meeting at work and we're going to run and pick up our kids. How would a mini meditation affect us in that moment? What is happening there and what can we expect to happen after doing that?
Well, as I'm speaking right now, I'd like the listeners to just elongate your exhales. Make them twice as long as your inhale. So it could be a 2-count inhale, 4-count exhale, or a 3-count inhale, 6-count exhale. Once you get that pace, you don't have to count everyone, but do that for the next few moments as I speak so you can get these results. So say you take 30 seconds, a minute to do this. What's happening is you are going into the rest, digest, and rejuvenate part of your nervous system, the parasympathetic nervous system state. And in this state, you are thinking clearer. Your blood pressure goes down. Your heart rate slows. And you're able to make better decisions. You're probably also going to speak slower and articulate better in those situations too. So just with a few breaths to a minute, you can have those effects to your nervous system, changing this state, going into that, what's called a relaxation response. We're in that stress response all day and in that high alert, we're breathing up in our chest. Bring the breath down, elongate your exhales, and just notice the moment. Notice how your body feels as you slow the breath. It's that simple. And you're going to go into that state of the relaxation response.
So is that how you recommend if someone's never meditated before to just start, is take a minute and breathe in that way, in that double, you know, three breaths in, six counts out, six counts out, and just start regulating your breathing and noticing it? Because I think a lot of us have trouble with releasing the thoughts. Like, this is a whole complicated element of meditation that I still struggle with, is how do you stop thinking? And you don't ever really stop thinking. Like, the thoughts still come in. You just don't rabbit hole down a road with mm-hmm. them. You sort of let them, oh, there's a thought, let it go, bye. You know, you don't, you know, hook up with it and start, you know, a whole relationship with that thought. Like, oh, I need to go to the grocery store. Oh, I need to get this. Oh, I might run into that part. You know, it's like, you can just keep going. Mm-hmm. But if you go, oh, I need to go to the grocery store. Oh, wait a minute. I'm not going to hang on to that. I'm in meditation. I'm going to breathe. Like, right? Is that
yes, that is what meditation is. Is meditation isn't just focusing the whole time. People think, oh, I'm not good at meditation because my brain wanders and I can't focus on the one thing, whatever it may be, the elongated exhales or the body sensations. It kind of depends what you like and what the situation is, but that is a good way to start. And people think, you know, I'm not good at it because I can't focus on it. But meditation isn't just the act of focusing on the thing. Meditation is noticing that your mind has wandered and coming back to the thing. And by doing that, you train new networks of activity in your brain that are responsible for that higher thinking to take over more often. And it becomes easier in time to notice, you know what, I'm thinking about something I shouldn't be thinking about right now, or I'm thinking about something that's distracting right now. And it's easier to come back. But yeah, as you said, it's not always going to be like, I'm just completely present 100% of the time. And I've reached enlightenment, or at least that's not where I am.
Have you reached enlightenment?
No, I think that, you know, we have moments where we feel really present and connected and compassionate, and we just want to expand those moments. We want to have more of them. And with practice, it doesn't make perfect. Practice makes presence.
I like that. It's beautiful. Yeah. It's interesting because I feel like in my meditation experience, I often use it to be able to neutralize an emotional response to a thought or an issue that I'm dealing with. So that kind of idea of the thoughts coming in and letting them go, it allows it to not be triggery sometimes. And then you can come in from that higher, place in your brain to make a good decision on what to do with that thing, you know?
Yeah, it's almost like you're stepping back and becoming an observer, like you're watching a movie. Your thoughts are the movie that's happening in front of you and you're watching it. I mean, when you watch a movie, you have a different feeling than when you're like in a
living
fight or in a, in a challenging debate with somebody, which often these sort of things are in our mind. They're like fights and debates and negative talk. It creates this distance, just like watching a movie, where you can be relaxed while experiencing whatever is in front of you. So I love how you called that neutralizing it. It naturally does that. Don't think of it as, oh, I need to neutralize my thoughts. The act of observing and stepping back naturally neutralizes them and naturally slows them down. So rather than thinking I need to stop them, I need to slow them down, I need to neutralize their charge, just think I'm going to watch them like a movie. I'm going to step back. Those things will naturally happen.
I do have difficulty in personal growth in general to stop trying to do something exactly like you're saying, because I will proactively be like, oh, I can neutralize. I'll neutralize. Show me how to do it. I'll do all the steps. I'm the doer. Like, I want nay. But really, so much of spirituality, meditation, inner knowing and listening to your intuition and growth, it's about allowing and not doing and stepping back and observing. But I'll tell you, it is my freaking life's work. Like, I am, it's so hard for me.
It's very hard for me too. I too am a recovering perfectionist. I use that title all the time. And actually, I regret that in my first book, I didn't have a lot of power because it was my very first book. They literally wrote on the cover, Science of Yoga, understand the anatomy and physiology to perfect your practice. What the heck is a perfect yoga class and a perfect yoga practice? Right. I told them that was not a thing. Can you say optimize? Nope. SEO reasons, whatever. They kept it. And it's just, you know, it was like a stab to me because I'm like, I'm a recovering perfectionist.
Yeah. I don't want that. You're like, on that's my like cover. A violation of my core values. Yeah.
It really is. But in my foreword, I speak to it. I speak to being a recovering perfectionist because I had to address it. I was like,
and maybe the perfect is allowing it to be imperfect. Yeah. I mean, that's like a big life work for me too. And I'm sure you feel that being, you know, kind of a recovering perfectionist, that the whole concept of perfection is really allowing ourselves to be imperfect because there's so much beauty, there's so much creativity, there's so much expansion, there's so much growth in imperfection. Like, it's the mistakes where the up levels are. But, you know, and perfection keeps us contained. We think it keeps us safe. It's the opposite. It contracts us and holds us back from where we need to go because we're too afraid to fail. But yeah, perfection, you know, I boring. Say that with such confidence, but yet the way I live, I mean, I'm a Virgo, you know, it's all about perfection. So what sign are you?
Oh, I'm a Cancer. What would that be for perfection? Would that be?
I don't know. I just know that Cancers are very, like, they're very home-oriented, very family, very loving, very relationship, you know.
So yeah.
I don't know what how that would fall in regards to perfection, though. I would think perfection would be more in the nesting kind of arena for them, and like creating grounding and safety and like their anchor, like that part needs to probably be perfect, but I'm theorizing a little bit.
Well, then I spent my 20s and 30s being very imperfect for my homestead, because I've been traveling the world. I lived in India and China and South America, and didn't hold a partner for very long, partly because I'm traveling. And just now I got engaged on New Year's Eve, and I'm marrying the love of my life at age 37. So
that's
finally.
Amazing. Congratulations. What a great story. I love that.
Yeah. So seeing the upside of that is, you know, all the things I've been through has led me to so deeply appreciate the family that I have and I'm developing now at a much higher level. All the online dating and
the
challenges.
Right? Yeah. Online dating. Jeez. It's not for the faint at heart. That is for certain. But you learn a lot, right? Like you're saying, you learn so much, not only about what you don't want and about people and relationship dynamics, but you learn a lot about yourself.
Yes, absolutely. And you learn how to be a better partner. I think that's led me to be a better partner today.
Yeah. Well, and what I think, like, most of my friends are married, like all my girlfriends, most of them are not divorced. I have very few single girlfriends. And I think they don't realize how much courage it takes to date later in life. I mean, it is, you have to be really brave, and it's very vulnerable. And I just think it's really hard.
That's one topic that did not make it into the book Meditation for the Real World, is meditations for right before a date. I was like, that would be a really good idea. Yeah. Everything else you could think of is in there, like doom scrolling, when you have text regret, you send a text that you're like upset about, you name it, it's in there. FOMO, a meditation for FOMO. But that one did not make it in there. So I've been thinking, like, what would I advise someone to do? Because, like, you get that moment before you go into a date, and you're in your car and you have a moment, or in the bathroom maybe before they arrive, and like you have that moment to settle and ground yourself and be open to possibilities, to accept and take some deep breaths. So I think I would probably recommend maybe my one common meditation that I teach. I do this every time I wash my hands, similar to the one we did earlier with the elongated exhales, but rather than double the exhales, I usually do, like, I'll wash my hands rather than singing happy birthday twice. I'll inhale for 4 counts and exhale for 6. So that makes 10 counts twice. So 2 breaths, that's it. And that's the amount of time you should wash your hands, according to the CDC. And it just gives you this moment to relax. You're going into that state of the parasympathetic nervous system. You're able to ground. If I'm in a public bathroom, I can look in the mirror and like look into my own eyes as I'm doing it. And I can reset no matter what chaos is going on around me in the bathroom. So that's something I do every single time I wash my hands. That's a reset, a little mini meditation.
So that's so interesting to me, because I think we think of meditation as we need isolated space, we need to be quiet, we need to close our eyes. But you're saying that you can actually do little mini meditations as you're living your life, just by breathing, essentially, right?
Yeah, by breathing or by changing your focus of thoughts. So some of the mini meditations might have you, like, you're out somewhere in nature, even if it's just like a blue space where there's a fountain nearby, or green space, there's a little park near your work, you're out in nature, you just notice all your five senses. You notice what you hear, see, feel, taste, smell out in nature. And it could be just that minute of appreciation. So integrating these little mini meditations into our lives helps us to reset our nervous system. And on the cover of the book, there's somebody in a train sitting with headphones on and they're meditating. You can do this anywhere, anytime, and your commute is a great place to do it. Especially, okay, so my partner deals with road rage. And it was stressing me out.
From road rage. Yeah.
Suffers. Yes. Yeah. Like it's a disease.
Right.
I mean, the drivers are pretty bad. So I get it. But he gets so frustrated. His blood pressure goes up. And since he started meditating, he's been a lot more calm and able to handle it. But we use those moments. Somebody cuts him off, you know. Rather than yelling at them, what the heck, how dare they, you know, letting your blood pressure rise. Instead, we use what is this Buddhist meditation technique called metta or loving kindness. And you send the person good wishes. And in this technique, this Buddhist technique, you send it to challenging people, not only the people you love. So we just do a little mini version of it. And we say, may they be safe. That's the easiest one to do. That's the traditional thing, is to send them the wishes to be safe. And that's so easy to do when somebody cut you off. You hope they can be safe and everybody around them can be safe. So it's almost a little snarky. So we like to say that, may they be safe. May they be healthy. May they be happy. You just give them good wishes and it releases that anger. It lowers your blood pressure. So integrating loving kindness meditation, a traditional meditation, and a little bite-sized mini meditation while you're driving, when you're stressed, that's going to be the biggest bang for your buck compared to even doing a longer meditation in the morning, because you're using it in the moment. You're teaching your body and brain how to go into that relaxation response in the most challenging of moments.
Yeah, and it's really showing up with grace with someone that's difficult. You could use that for any kind of difficult person, right?
I use it for difficult people.
I just played in a tennis tournament yesterday and my partner and I lost pretty badly. And I just got this weird energy from our opponents. Like they just were kind of not very gracious, put it that way. And I think I could have used that little meditation towards that, like sending them loving kindness would have made me feel good in a situation where, I mean, it didn't make me, I don't think it necessarily made me play worse, but it affected my energy and mindset. Yeah. And I didn't like it, you know? So I like that. That's a good tool. Very, very good one.
We use that all the time. And also it works for yourself, for recovering perfectionists. One part of that traditional Buddhist practice is that you first send loving kindness to yourself, which is the hardest one for many of us, especially if you're like us and you hold yourself to a very high standard. So let's just try that right now. Everyone listening, repeat this in your head. May I be safe? May I be healthy? May I be joyful? May I be free from suffering? May I be at ease?
Do you have recorded meditations too?
I do. And at meditationfortherealworld.com, you can join the meditation challenge and get audio meditations that go with the book. So you'll see where you can buy the book and then you can get audio meditations that guide you through it. And it's 10 minutes a day. That's it. And then I give you these mini meditations that you can take with you through your day after you've learned the technique.
So you have guided meditations, but you also have other ones like the ones we're talking about that you can do, like that tell you how to do it, is what you're saying.
Well, that's what the book does. So the book gives you the directions and tells you how to do it. And then the guided meditations will guide you through the full for example, one of the meditations is the loving kindness meditation as done traditionally. So you send loving kindness to yourself, you send it to a loved one, you send it to a challenging person, and you go through the process. And then the homework is the mini meditation. Now, when somebody cuts you off in traffic, do this. Just send them whatever words you can remember. I think the easiest one to send to those challenging people is may they be safe, because I feel like we can send that to anyone. But you can even make your own up. It doesn't have to be those exact words, but sending them that loving kindness is kind of the 1 minute meditation homework.
I think that could be used in the middle of like an argument with a spouse or, right? I mean, anything. You could just slow down and kind of come to that thought.
Yeah, definitely. And a lot of times when I get to the one that's may they be free from suffering, that creates a lot of perspective because likely that person is yelling at you, they're cutting you off, whatever they're doing, whatever action that's frustrating you, they're doing it because they themselves are suffering.
Yes.
That's why they're so acting out, right? Hurt people hurt people. So sending them that sense of being free from suffering, it's also helping you develop compassion. And that's what this type of meditation is called. It's called a compassion-based meditation, which there's been more and more research to support these sort of meditations for our own mental health. We're sending compassion to other people, but we see that it helps our mental health and it even improves our immune system ability to fight invaders just from sending good wishes to somebody.
It's almost like a forgiveness practice. You know, like a releasing, hanging on to resentment or anger, or it, you know, it keeps us from engaging energetically into, you know, that kind of energy, like an anger, a conflict energy.
Yeah. And I think I like the word you used, neutralizes it. It's like forgiving or neutralize, but just because you're neutralizing your own emotional response to it doesn't mean whatever that person did was okay. So I want to emphasize that. So say somebody did something bad to you or somebody you love, you can send them the good wishes, but then you can still rise to handle the situation and say, you know, that's not okay, and set a boundary. But you'll do it from a kinder, more calm place. That's probably going to be more effective if you can neutralize it a little bit. Take your level 10 anger and frustration down to a level 2 and come with grace.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like that. Let's talk a little bit about how meditation, the practice of kind of slowing down, and I think this is like a real thing, especially in our culture now with we're so busy, we're going, we're doing, we have so many thoughts going through our heads, and a situation arises and we can be very reactionary. And I think by taking that time to slow down, breathe a little, and settle some of the chaos that is going on in our minds, allows us to not only like actually physically calm down, but to see the clarity in the situation. You know, it's like a clearing out of all the stuff in our that's going on in our minds all the time, right?
Yeah, I definitely feel that clarity from it. And we're able to, rather than being reactive, we can respond. We can respond thoughtfully. And back to that analogy, it's like watching a movie. You're like watching it. And, you know, when you're watching a movie, it's like you have more clarity of like what's going on, what could be said. It's just kind of gives you that sense of clarity. You see it.
You zoom out more.
Yeah. Yes, that's exactly it. You zoom out.
Yeah. So what about for the really big things in life? Like we're talking about little things, being in the moment and calming ourselves down. And then you also talked about the larger picture, you know, actually physical health benefits. But what if you're going through something really hard, like a breakup or divorce or losing a job or, you know, something that you need meditation to help get you through? And you know, you might have the book and there's a meditation for, you know, this or that, but how do you set up or create some kind of a practice that can be your cornerstone and anchor and help you not only calm your nervous system through it, but help you make, you know, navigate to the way you want to in the best way possible.
Yes. So two things come up for me for this is that first, to develop a habit based on science, not just a habit for meditation. This is the secret for developing a habit for anything, but it works really well for meditation. You want to take the meditation practice, whether it be the 1 minute meditation as I wash my hands or a 10 minute meditation, 5-10 minutes in the morning. You want to pair it with something you already have a strong habit of. You already wash your hands. You already make coffee or tea in the morning. You every day you do that and you sit down and you enjoy your coffee or tea. Maybe the sun's rising. I don't know. You think of your own personal thing. You always floss. You always, I have, for me personally, I have dealt with chronic pain since I was young. So I do red light therapy. I always do red light therapy. So you're going to pair your meditation with that habit that's already strongly established. So I do my meditation practice 10 minutes with the red light therapy. Also, you could do it. You make the coffee or tea, you smell it brewing. That's when you turn on an audio meditation, you open up the book, you find a meditation, and you do it right then. Then your first sip of coffee or tea is going to have that behind you, and you will feel a different sense of clarity for the day. You're setting that tone for the day. So even though I do advocate these little mini meditations through the day, if you want to establish a practice of a longer meditation, putting it next to something you already do is also the way to establish that practice. That's how it's going to work.
Well, and I think it's okay to change your practice up. Like it doesn't always have, like it can be somewhat of a routine, like you're saying, but it doesn't mean it needs to always be the same. Because for me,
no.
Sometimes I meditate and have music. Sometimes I meditate to nothing. Sometimes I do a guided meditation. Sometimes I just consider yoga my meditation for the day. It just depends on kind of what I'm feeling like doing in the day or what I'm able to do sometimes, like what I can actually fit in and realistically do.
Yeah. As a yoga therapist, it was really important to me to focus in on meditations that are going to help you not only like for situations, but different times of life, different seasons. You're going to notice your meditation changes, whether it's spring or winter, whether you're in a very busy time of your life, or it's a calmer, more reflective time, whether you just had a baby or you're mourning the loss of a loved one. And that's why I really wanted to like zoom in, like what could we do for each of these situations and life stages to help. The meditation will always constantly evolve based off of your needs. It's not going to be one set meditation that you always just do that. Yeah. Or at least not for most
Some
of
people
us.
Do
it's
that,
not gonna be the
yeah,
most effective.
Yeah. So a couple more questions that came up for me as we're talking. What about a meditation practice for kids? I think sometimes kids don't want to use the word meditation, but maybe there are ways to integrate it, like calling it a calm breathing practice or your nighttime 10 breaths or taking breaths when they're upset or angry. You know, what do you think about that? Like, what do you recommend for kids and what's a good way to integrate that?
I wrote a whole section for kids because it's so important. It's critical for the future of the world to get more meditators out there, to have people that are and entering the workforce in the future be meditating and more peaceful and at ease. It's the best time to do it. So I think that the first thing as the parent is to model it yourself. When you're stressed, do these techniques, integrate them in your life and let them see it. Let them know you're doing a breathing break. I need a breathing break right now. I'm feeling frustrated. And then show them the results. So they'll be interested and they'll start to want to do that too. One good breathing break for kids is really tactile on it. And this works for adults too. So if you're listening, you could just take your thumb, I'm using my right hand. So you can take your right thumb and cover your right nostril. And then you're just going to breathe through your left nostril. And when you breathe through your left nostril, it helps your body go into that parasympathetic state, that rest, digest, and rejuvenate state. So with a kid, you could have them cover their right nostril, take three deep breaths, three deep belly breaths, feel your belly moving in the middle of a tantrum, and then have them release their hands down. That tactile element of putting the hand up and doing that, that can help them get back into their body as well as their breath. So I find that really helpful for kids.
Yeah, that makes so much sense to connect back into our bodies. Because I think when the emotions are coming in strong, you know, especially little kids, but I think a lot of adults just kind of surrender into it and are not in their bodies at all.
Yeah. There's this common saying, when there's a problem in the head, whether it's you're feeling depressed, anxious, whatever, the solution is in your body. When there's a problem in your body, the solution's in your head. And I've found that to be true because I deal with chronic pain. And what we know about chronic pain is that, you know, the best effects you can have is to change your nervous system's interpretation of the sensations, because it's not actually the tissue damage that's causing the pain. When it's chronic, there's a zero correlation between the amount of tissue damage you have and the amount of pain you have. It's your brain's misinterpretations of the signals. So if you can retrain your brain and rebuild those areas of the brain that tend to degrade with pain, over time, you're not going to experience as much pain. And I found that for myself. When there's this problem in the body, the solution was meditation in my mind.
So how did you do that with the intent to heal your body? Like, let's say you have an injured shoulder or something, you have shoulder pain. How would you, do you just meditate and it integrates into that over time? Or do you specifically think about healing your shoulder? Or what does that look like when you do that?
Yes. And so over time, meditation just helps your body be more resilient and not have as much pain. And in the moment, this is so counterintuitive. One of the best meditations you could do for pain is body sensation. You'd think, oh, I want to distract and go away and not think about it. That's why I take these pills to cover it up. But actually, your body is yelling at you. So listen right now. Listen to, say, your shoulder hurts. Listen to your shoulder fully. And don't just label it as pain. Maybe listeners out there have an area of your body that is in pain right now. Listen to it. Go there for a moment. Feel it. And rather than labeling it as pain, I want you to inquire, what does it have to say? So feel it maybe as pulsation or dullness. Or vibration. These are just some words that come up for me. Maybe you feel coldness. Maybe you feel emptiness or fullness. What do you feel in that area? Label it with something different than just the word pain. Experience it as sensations other than that label. And by listening to it and paying attention, ironically, that could reduce the pain right there. I find that when I'm in pain with my chronic joint pain, when it flares up, I'm like, oh, I'm in pain. And we get in this mindset where it's like, now I'm not going to be able to do the activities I want. Now I can't focus. Now I can't, you know, and you just, now I'm not going to be able to sleep and the week is ruined. You get in that mindset because you've experienced it before. And that's just that catastrophizing comes up. So instead, can you feel it and notice it? What does it have to say? And I'll feel my joints, they feel like they're pulsating, and I'll lie down and I'll feel them and I'll just listen to them, pay attention to them. And it starts to be kind of like that movie where you're stepping back and you're able to observe it more and not be so like attached to it, not be so much of a victim to it. And I find that does help a lot in the moment. And then other types of meditation that can help with pain is like a yoga nidra, which is one where you lie down and you can use pillows for cushioning and you're guided. You can listen to a guided practice where you're step-by-step going through this visualization. And they're usually like 20 to 30 minutes, which sounds like a lot, but when you're lying down, you're going to like fall asleep almost, but you're in between the stage of sleep and awakeness. And you know, that moment when you like twitch, you've all experienced this probably in a yoga class at some point, or at least I have in the beginning stages. I would like half fall asleep in Shavasana at the end of class. That like moment in between sleep and awake stage, that's a place of deep healing. And so a yoga nidra can be a really great place too. Now, this is all talking about chronic pain. When it's acute pain, when you're like in the doctor's office and they're giving you a procedure and it hurts, different meditation.
Yeah.
Totally different, because I have issues with that type of pain too.
Yeah. What came up for me when you were talking about this, when you were talking about letting your pain express and not calling it pain, but kind of seeing what comes through for you to describe it. It's almost like you're stepping away and giving your pain the space to sort of communicate to you, mm-hmm. and letting it express and dissipate, sort of. And it's like here we're going, okay, like almost accepting that the pain is there and saying, you know, okay, what's in this for me? What's here in the pain that I need to know? And I think sometimes when you do that, really interesting things come up, that it's not what you think it's going to be. It's not, oh, it's pressure. It's radiating. It might be more like, I feel a burden, or I feel heaviness. I feel weighed down. I feel like there's too much, you know, where yes, it's pain, but these different ways of expressing it kind of lead you to that root cause and source that's beyond just the physical manifestation of it.
Yeah. Maybe that shoulder pain you're experiencing is because you are feeling psychologically like you have too big of a weight on your shoulders right now. So when you listen to that inner wisdom, when you take a few moments to feel it, to heal it, that wisdom will arrive for you. And it may be, you know what, I need to take a bath right now. It might be, I need to cross some things off my list and delegate them to somebody to get that burden, that weight off my shoulder. It's amazing what insights might come to you when you take that moment. And that's why I say that meditation expands your time. It helps you to be able to prioritize and manage your time better when you take that 1 minute, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, whatever you take, you're able to more clearly see, what does my heart want?
Well, that's so new for us to be asking that. I would say, especially as women, like we really don't nurture ourselves in the way that we really need. I mean, at least for me, it's very new. And the only way you really get tuned into that is the slowing down and the meditation and the breathing to realize even how you feel, right? Like that was kind of my next question is, how does the practice of meditation connect us deeper into our true emotions? Because I think there are sort of the surface level emotions that come through when we're angry or sad or frustrated or even really joyful and happy. But when you meditate and you let yourself really feel in, and, you know, would love to get your take on what the meaning of grounding is, because we use that a lot. We use it a lot in yoga. I say it a lot, but I think a lot of people don't really even know what that means. You know, it's really, I mean, I'll ask the question then, you know, what would you say grounding is? That was like five questions in one, but then I want to talk about emotions and how we can connect in deeper and better to our emotions through meditation.
I can answer it in one, because I think the common emotion that we want to use grounding for is anxiety. Because when we're anxious, it feels like we're way up high. It feels like we're spacious, even sometimes out of body. Like it feels like we're high alert, high in some ways. So grounding is feeling settled. It's kind of like imagining, you know, a snow globe that's all shaken up. When it's all shaken up, it's like representing that anxiety. And then you watch it slowly settle. It's so relaxing. I remember doing that as a kid. It's so relaxing to watch all those little pieces settle down. So grounding from the philosophical, spiritual perspective, is just that settling down of the energy. Now, from the scientific perspective, there is something that researchers call grounding. It's also called earthing, is the technical term that they usually use in research. And this sounds woo-woo, but it's not. I included the like peer-reviewed research studies in the book on this. And it is when you stand barefoot on earth, on the grass, on the sand, wherever, you know, physically hug or touch a tree, wherever you are touching the earth, lie down on the ground. You could meditate under a tree. When your body is in contact with the earth, the negatively charged electrons affect your energy internally and your inflammation goes down. Your blood sugar levels go down from experiencing time earthing or grounding. They use those words interchangeably. Your immune system improves its ability to fight invaders. Your blood pressure goes down. Did I mention that one? So there's a lot of effects from it that are measurable. Depression and anxiety, those are big ones. As I mentioned, grounding, we think of in the yoga terms, is often used for anxiety. Well, we see that grounding from a scientific perspective, being in contact with the earth and feeling that contact to the earth, is beneficial for your mental health.
We need to do more of that.
Yeah.
It's probably nice to do in Hawaii, right? On the beach. Love the beach.
Even just the lawn, you know, I'm near the beach, but I'm mostly standing in the grass. I just love that feeling of standing in the grass. So if you can't, if you're in winter somewhere, you can't get your feet on the ground, you know, also wood floors, stone floors, those can be beneficial too, or just touching. When you go on a walk in nature, literally touch the tree, feel it. Beautiful. It sounds woo-woo, but there's evidence that this helps our inflammation. I find it so fascinating that the neuroscience and the cutting edge research is just slowly beginning to catch up with what is so intuitive. Go in nature, touch the earth. That's so intuitive to us that we should be naturally doing that. But it's the research is just beginning to catch up on that. So I like to include a lot of, you know, research on how can we optimize our meditation practice and make it easier for us to do it, right? Because it's not going to work unless you do it. I love how you said you sometimes listen to music. I've been experimenting a lot with sounds, and some sounds can be engineered to optimize your brainwave patterns for meditating so that you can focus better. And so I also like to listen to like different color noises, like brown noise is the sound of the ocean, the waves. So even a recording, they found even a recording of these sort of nature sounds are very beneficial to our nervous system. So I integrate them a lot into my audio meditations because it is so effective to get people into that state quicker.
It's so interesting because you're saying, you know, the science is just now catching up, but it's really a big circling back to where we came from, right?
Yes.
Like what we used to probably do, like our ancestors did.
So yeah.
Yeah.
The research I explored for this book is like, go in nature, do more art, dance and move. You know, if we integrate these things with our meditation, it's going to be more effective. It's get sunlight during the day, but then also get the sunset and the sunrise light. That's going to be ideal to set your circadian rhythm. So I recommend, you know, meditate with the sun setting or the sun rising, even if you don't see it actually. It's just the light in the sky has specific spectrums that go into your retina and your brain interprets, you know, at sunset, there's more oranges and reds just in the sky in general and in the light and the air. You go outside and you see that, your brain interprets, oh, it's time to release melatonin. You don't need to take an external melatonin. You have an internal pharmacy to create these. You just need to go outside and open your eyes.
Wow. I love the idea of meditating to a sunrise. Like I always think of meditating as I have to close my eyes, but you really don't, right? You can just look at the sunrise and breathe.
That's your meditation. Your focal point could be a visual. It could be the audio. You could put on a song. It could be your breath. It could be the body sensations. The focal point, often chosen by your teacher or by the situation, it can be anything. You just need to focus on that point. And when your mind wanders to something else, you know what, your list of things to do, notice that's part of it. That's natural. It happens to all of us. And then just come back to the focal point, watching the sunset, watching the waves, watching whatever you're watching. That's a way you can meditate anywhere. And I love doing that to appreciate nature, especially just look at a tree blowing in the wind.
Yeah. Oh, so beautiful. I love it. Well, I do have one more topic and I know we're going late. Are you okay with time?
Yes, I'm okay.
Okay. Just because I love this topic too. And this whole conversation, I mean, it's been so insightful and I learned a lot. It's amazing. You're really good at what you do. And you have such a great voice too. I can't wait to listen to your meditations. It's going to be really fun. I love it. What is your take on meditation and manifesting? Because I know I was reading about you before the interview and I can't remember exactly what it was, but it said that you had used meditation to manifest something in your life. And I'm always so interested in that because sometimes manifestation can feel a little elusive. So how can we harness that, you know, calm, grounded, clear energy to call in, you know, the feelings and things that we want in life?
I mean, I think that with the rise of like manifestation gurus on Instagram, it can make us roll our eyes a little bit. But when you really look at the science, the neuroscience of this, it just makes sense. Because when we are setting goals for our business, for our finances, we set a goal, we set a specific goal, and we work toward that, right? The same thing for anything in your life. When you set a goal, you can see it. You're going to be more likely to achieve it when you keep reminding yourself of it. You keep coming back to it every single day. And that's what a manifestation meditation can do. You visualize what your intention is. Like I manifested my partner in my life. And for years, I did this one meditation where you visualize your partner and you visualize how do you feel around them? What do you give them? You know, how do they treat you? And that makes it very clear in your mind what you're going to tolerate in dating. And the reason why I didn't have lots of the long-term relationships, I ended them. They weren't treating me like I was visualizing. I was going to wait for the right one. And so I love manifestation meditations because they focus on gratitude and the fact that you're worthy. So you focus on, I'm worthy of this. This is my vision. And you let yourself know that every day in your longer meditation or in your little mini meditations, you can sprinkle this through your day too. And you focus on gratitude. And there's an abundance of research to support gratitude for our overall health. It may be one of the secrets to happiness is just being grateful for whatever you have and focusing on it, it expands. More things come into your life. You're grateful. You live in a space of gratitude. You're going to attract better friends and opportunities and connections. So gratitude is really the key.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Yeah. It just makes you feel good too.
Yeah. It puts you in that good vibes when you can. I think of it as gratitude or even if you have trouble with that, appreciation, because that's an action. Mm. What could you do to show appreciation right now? Like, okay, I'm loving this interview. I could leave a review for See the Upside. That's showing appreciation. And notice how that feels to show that appreciation. You know, leave reviews for authors when you like a book. That authors read those and they mean so much to them. Show your appreciation through action in the world. That's also going to come back at you. That's like good karma when you put that out there.
Oh, it totally is. I love doing those things, you know, and I think we kind of get lost in our everyday and we tend to focus on putting out the fires and the problems. But when we shift to really, you know, along with the words gratitude and appreciation, it's really about noticing and highlighting and seeing the good things.
Yes.
I mean, see the upside, right? But it's, you know, to me, I say that so much, it's like a tagline, but really what it's about is in any situation, no matter how hard things are, there are always good things happening. And if you don't notice them, you'll miss them and you'll look back and you'll go, oh my gosh, I remember when, you know, I had, you know, this feeling at this time and I didn't even realize how amazing it was. You know, when my kids were little, how busy it felt and how overwhelming, but how beautiful it was to have them at those ages and how just incredible each milestone was and how adorable they were and all the things that happened and the memories that you have. But sometimes you're stuck in the, oh, they're, you know, I have to get them to school and I have to make lunches and the, you know, they won't listen. And it's like, there's beauty in that too. And if you focus and start seeing things through that lens, your feeling and your experience totally shifts. And then, like you're saying, not only do you feel better and it's more fun and it just feels good, but you're like emanating this golden, beautiful energy that goes out. Yes. And that kind of becomes your magnet too. Like not only do you believe there's more good because there's good and you're grateful and you're appreciative and all that, but you're drawing it in because of the energy that you're putting out, the feeling that you feel that's like coming out of you.
And I'd like to end this interview the way I started it. And it's to invite your listeners to look for glimmers in your life. I mean, a rainbow is an obvious glimmer. Your pet, even a picture of your pet that makes you smile, you know, that person that serves you coffee, who's just really kind, these little glimmers, and take a moment to do a 1 minute meditation, a mini meditation, and feel that gratitude. That's going to emanate it and magnetize more of it. It's an energy of yes and more. If you want to continue on with meditations, definitely check out Meditation for the Real World at meditationfortherealworld.com. And you can get the book, find the links to get the book, and then also join the meditation challenge, which is my gift to you all for listening. And that will guide you through meditations with these sound healing and these mini meditation homeworks for you to find glimmers into your life.
Oh, love it. We'll have all the links in the show notes and I can't wait to download it. And I want these books. I think they're wonderful. They're going to be on my night table go-tos or on my kitchen table, maybe even because I can see the sunrise from my kitchen table. And, you know, I live in Arizona and this time of year, we just have incredible sunrises and sunsets are just magical, just pink, orange, yellow, you know, all the colors. So it's beautiful.
That's a glimmer. This is a coffee table book or nightstand book because my publisher is known for these sort of illustrative books. The illustrator is for the New York Times and the New Yorker. And so it's a relaxing experience to read it. That's what makes it like a good like coffee table or gift book.
Oh, I love it. Well, it might just become my go-to gift. I love that. I've been looking for one. Two more really quick questions. One is, what books are you reading? Besides, obviously, you have your books right there, but what do you have on Audible or on your night table these days? Anything good?
I keep rereading over and over the book Breath by James Nestor. So I was just revisiting that yesterday. That was a life-changing book for me. I highly recommend it. I have a whole stack by my bedside right now. I'm reading also the book Manifest.
I don't know that one. Okay, good. I'll have to check it out. Thank you. What about music? What's on your Spotify or iTunes playlist? What do you like to listen to?
I literally just released my first meditation music album yesterday. So I've been listening to that on repeat. And so you can find out how you can get that at meditationfortherealworld.com. I have some music. I worked with a sound engineer who has two master's degrees in music. And she used the science of sound and we did a lot of research to create this music specifically engineered to change your brainwaves for specific feelings. And I have been playing some of the songs on repeat in the background to help me work, to focus, or to relax. That's been really cool for me.
Oh, perfect. Well, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure, so expansive. I learned a lot. I already feel grounded and calm. And I want to go walk out in the grass right now. We have beautiful yes. grass in the winter here. So
thank you yeah. so much, Nina.
Thanks for joining today's episode of See the Upside podcast. For more details about today's guest and show notes and links, visit our website at seetheupside.com. You can find us on Instagram at see.theupside and Facebook at See the Upside. If you love today's show, please spread the light by giving us a rating or sharing it with a friend. We appreciate you so much and love sharing the positivity with anyone who could be inspired by it. We're all on a beautiful journey, and it's so much more fun doing it together and sharing our stories with each other along the way. Can't wait till next time.